Welcome. You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for the Saturday, November 15th, 2025 reading of the Jefferson County Publications. My name is Donna Gill. Today, we will be reading from the following main articles. From the Arvada Press, 2025 Arvada Election, Mormon, Griffith, and Levison win city council seats, by Riley Dunn. Former Arvada K-8 site tapped for alternate library services while Arvada Library undergoes renovations, by Riley Dunn. Voters OK Meals Plan for Schools, by Chase Woodruff. And from the Canyon Courier, Fire Insurance Costs Discussions Ongoing, Advocates Say, by Jane Reuter. Jeffco Students with 3.0 GPA Get CU Denver Guarantee, by Susie Glassman. New Faces Emerge as Jeffco School Board Reshaped, by Susie Glassman. And from the Jeffco Transcript, Lakewood City Council Election Results, by Lillian Fugley. 2025 Arvada Election, Mormon, Griffith, Levison win city council seats. Arvada voters reject ballot question that would have repealed judicial residency requirement, by Riley Dunn. Arvada voters decided on three city council members who will serve four-year terms on November 4th. Randy Mormon, who won re-election in District 1, Michael Griffith, who won the at-large seat formerly occupied by Brad Rupert, and Rebecca Levison, who won the District 3 seat formerly occupied by John Marriott. Rupert was appointed to the dais in 2024 and decided not to run again. Marriott was term-limited after spending 12 years on council. Voters rejected a ballot question that would have amended the city charter to remove a stipulation that all municipal court judges must reside in Arvada. That decision means that municipal court judges must be Arvada residents. The new city council members were sworn in on November 11th. At large, Griffith wins on third attempt. Planning Commission Chair Michael Griffith has won the race for Arvada City Council's at-large seat, defeating challenger Denise Vargas by earning 62% of the 39,281 votes that have been tallied as of 7:36 a.m. on November 6th. The at-large seat covers all of Arvada and is voted on by all city residents. The seat has been held by Brad Rupert since his appointment in 2024 after former councilmember Lisa Ferret was elected to the state legislature. Rupert did not seek re-election. Griffith is the longtime chair of the Planning Commission and has sought a seat on City Council twice previously before this year, in 2021 and 2023. He was unsuccessful both times. Vargas is a psychologist who, until recently, worked with incarcerated individuals. "I've likened Arvada many times to a microcosm of America," Griffith said. "We have just about everything here. I mean, we have people riding horses down Indiana, we have a rail line, and we have an amazing recreational center with Apex and the Myers Pool and Old Town." And so to win by a reasonable margin on a citywide election says that folks from a large or wide spectrum background think that I'm the right person to represent them, and that's a heavy burden, to be honest, but it's one that I look forward to meeting. Vargas said she called Griffith to concede. "I am totally okay with the voters' decisions, and I trust that Mike Griffith will make good decisions on behalf of Arvada," Vargas said. Griffith resigned from his Planning Commission seat at the November 5th meeting after starting off the meeting with the Pledge of Allegiance and the roll call. The position will be filled by the typical process, which will include interviews with City Council members. "I have complete confidence in the remaining Planning Commission members who provide the Council with detailed rationale for their decisions and look forward to reading their meeting minutes," Griffith said of Planning Commission. "It's been a wonderful journey, and I am grateful for the opportunity to work with such a dedicated team." Griffith said he recommended former Planning Commission member Doug McGee for the chairperson role. District 1, Mormon wins re-election bid. Incumbent Randy Moorman defeated Eric Bodenstab in the race for Arvada City Council's District 1 seat, earning 69% of the 10,023 votes that have been tallied as of 7:36 a.m. on November 5th. The District 1 seat covers Northeast Arvada. The seat has been held by Moorman since he was first elected in 2021. On election night, Moorman said he was looking forward to continuing the work he started on the dais. "I feel very humbled to have this responsibility to serve the people of Arvada and continue doing the great work that we've been doing so far," Moorman said. "I'm really excited to keep on working on these challenges that we have as a community, like homelessness, tackling climate, and affordability and transportation. Those are the big ones that I see that we got to keep working on. I'm really excited to build off the work that we have done and make some really significant progress in the next couple of years," Moorman continued. Moorman said Bodenstab called to concede on election night. Bodenstab said that he was happy to give voters a choice in what was, for most of the election cycle, an uncontested race. "I've been a candidate many times, and this is by far the best," Bodenstab said. "It was a good group of candidates. I'm glad everybody in every district had a choice. I had a short runway, so it was hard for me to really get to knock on every door, but I think I got out there a good amount and was able to make a pretty strong case. That being said, Randy, he's been a good councilman." Bodenstab continued, "It wasn't necessarily about him to me. It was more about being surprised that really no one had challenged him by August." Moorman has championed a number of environmental and sustainability causes since his first election. He served on Arvada's Sustainability Advisory Committee, as well as the Rocky Flats Stewardship Council. Bodenstab has sought election to numerous positions in the last few years, including the Jefferson County Board of Commissioners, the Jefferson County School Board, and the Arvada Fire Protection District Board of Directors. District 3, Levison earns seat on council. Rebecca Levison defeated Aaron Scoff in the race for Arvada City Council's District 3 seat, with Levison earning 70% of the 8,520 votes that have been tallied as of 7:36 a.m. on November 6th. The District 3 seat covers southwest Arvada, including most of Old Town. The seat has long been occupied by John Marriott, who is term limited after serving 12 years on the dais. This is Levison's first time seeking elected office. She has previously served on Arvada's Festival Commission and on other volunteer boards within the city. Scoff is a longtime Arvada resident who said he was running due to concerns about the city's growing unhoused population. On election night, Levison said she was excited to get to work. "It's truly an honor to be trusted by so many people, and I feel very humbled and grateful and excited," Levison said. "I believe in the power of neighbors coming together, and I really believe in the power of listening. I'm totally humbled by the support and honor to have your vote, Arvada. I will be leading with integrity and openness in my heart." Scoff said he called Levison to concede and said that he felt the result was in part due to his late entry in the race and fellow candidate Nathan Mudd's dropping out due to health issues. "I think what my downfall was that I just sort of got into the race a little bit late," Scoffy said. "And I did that because I had expected Nate Mudd to drop to mop the house with Levison. And then with that changed, and through a bit of Nate's turmoil, it just really kind of put the pressure on me to sort of step up and be the opponent. I had a plan from the beginning of how we were going to do this, but we were so late to the game, it wasn't enough. Voters reject proposed charter amendment. Ballot question 3G failed with 63% of 43,630 voters voting no, requiring that judges will continue to have to live in Arvada. Although the outcome of the municipal judge residency vote wasn't what we had hoped for, the city values hearing from voters and respects their input," Arvada's communication director, Rachel Kuroiwa, said. "The Arvada Municipal Court remains committed to providing high-quality, ethical, and fair judicial processes that residents can continue to trust. Arvada Municipal Judge Katie Kurtz said in a recent podcast appearance that the residency requirement has made it difficult for the city to hire relief judges. The city currently has just 3 relief judges. Thornton, a smaller-sized city that has no judicial residency requirement, has 13 relief judges. Only 4 municipal courts in Colorado require judges to be residents of the municipality they serve. This article is accompanied by a photo with the following caption. From left, Randy Mormon, Rebecca Levison, Michael Griffith. Photo by Riley Dunn. This is a photo of the 3 winners. On the left, the man who is Randy Mormon has a purple long-sleeve button-up shirt, khaki pants with a black belt, and dark blue shoes. They have white soles and they're lace up. He's smiling at the camera. He has a beard and glasses. He's a white man and he has a bit of a receding hairline. Next is Rebecca Levison, and she is wearing jeans and black flats. She has on a black t-shirt with a black and white over shirt. She is a white woman. She has dark hair, a little longer than shoulder length, a little bit curly. She has dark eyes. She's smiling at the camera. Next is Michael Griffith. He is wearing black jeans, black shoes with white soles, a fleece hoodie, and a black collared shirt. It looks like maybe it's a golf shirt. He has a beard and glasses. He's a white man. Also has a little bit of a receding hairline with dark brown hair. Former Arvada K-8 site tapped it for alternate library services, while Arvada Library undergoes renovations. 14-month project to enhance Old Town Library set to start before end of year, by Riley Dunn. A former Arvada K-8 building will be the temporary site for local library services for 14 months while the Arvada Library in Old Town is taken offline for a $14.9 million redesign that will increase its service capacity. The Jefferson County Public Library, JCPL, Board of Trustees approved a 14-month lease at their October 16th meeting, which will see JCPL pay the current owner of the former Arvada K-8 building, Jefferson County Public Schools, $5,173 per month for a total cost of approximately $72,422. The lease was signed on November 6th. The lease will begin on December 1st and run until November 30th, 2026, with the option to extend on a month-to-month basis if needed. Arvada K-8, located at 6751 Balsam Street, closed at the end of the 2023-2024 school year as part of Jeffco School's contraction efforts. While JCPL did not give exact dates for a project, a statement said that the Arvada Library will likely close at the end of the year, and the alternative location will open in January 2026. The alternative library is located approximately half a mile from the Arvada Library. The alternative library services location will offer similar resources to those offered at the Arvada Library, a statement from JCPL said. As part of the move, there will be a brief period when both libraries are closed so that we can move materials and get ready for the new year. We will share the exact dates of the library closure and opening of alternative services as they become available. The Arvada Library redevelopment is funded by tax dollars from Jeffco residents and will see the library increase its capacity, increase literacy rates, and be a third place in the community, according to JCPL Director of Communications and Engagement, Elise Pennington. Some of the improvements that will be made to the library include the addition of partitions to gathering spaces that can make them into breakout rooms, dedicated zones for different youth age groups, a sensory space that supports neurodiversity, and a reimagined patio space off of Old Town Square. Similar to other location redesigns, JCPL will be seeking to improve space efficiency and flow, align with future service and community needs, foster increased circulation, provide collaborative areas for conversation and discovery, including a heightened occupancy of study and meeting rooms, and implement modern security systems and design to enhance overall safety, Pennington said in a previous interview with the Arvada Press. The Arvada Library redesign is part of a slew of moves JCPL has made to increase service to patrons in Arvada, including opening the 24/7 holds locker in Candelas, purchasing a 9.4-acre plot of land in Candelas to build a new full-service library and opening the Express Library in West Arvada. This article is accompanied by a photo with the following caption: rendering of the updated Arvada Library, courtesy of JCPL. And this is a picture of a building with red brick on the lower third. It looks like it's about two or three stories, maybe two stories, with the upper story being having quite high ceiling clearance. There are a couple trees out front. It looks like it's about a block in size, and it's brown on top with, or actually kind of light brown, kind of a putty color. And you can see very large windows, and you can see that they're open. And there's a sidewalk in front. It looks like maybe some parking lot as well. Voters okay meals plan for schools. Propositions LL and MM would fully fund program created by voters in 2022. Shannon Thompson, Public Policy and Legislative Chair for the Colorado School Nutrition Association, speaks at an event in support of two ballot measures to shore up funding for the state school meals program in September. This is the caption of a picture with this article, and it's a woman in a flowered shirt standing at a lectern or a podium, and she is speaking and facing the camera. Behind her, there are about 15 people, looks like mostly women, mostly white women. They have brown hair, blonde hair, long hair, mostly. Oh, it looks like there is an African-American person. They're wearing all different colors. They're mostly wearing sunglasses because it's outside. And behind them, you can see some cars, some green grass, some trees. It looks like a house or a building of some sort. And they're holding up signs that say, yes, LLMM, Healthy School Meals for All. And this article is by Chase Woodruff. Two ballot measures to fund Colorado's Universal Schools Meals Program, the only statewide contests in the 2025 off-year election, were approved by voters November 4th, according to unofficial results. The Associated Press called the race in favor of Proposition MM, which would raise $95 million annually for school meals by limiting tax deductions for filers with higher incomes at 8:25 p.m., with more than 1.4 million votes counted, nearly 65% of voters had cast a ballot in favor of Proposition LL, and 58% voted in favor of Proposition MM. Both measures were referred to the ballot by the Colorado General Assembly earlier this year. Together, they will shore up funding for Healthy School Meals for All, a state program that provides free breakfast and lunch to all students regardless of their family's income level. Thank you to every voter, volunteer, committee partner, community partner, and endorsing organization who turned out to pass Propositions LL and MM, ensuring every child in Colorado can contribute to a healthy meal at school, Joe Kaborek, K campaign manager for the Keep Kids Fed Colorado campaign, said in a press release. Propositions LL and MM will keep kids fed in school, leading to better grades, higher graduation rates, and better outcomes for Colorado students. Colorado voters approved a ballot measure to create the program 3 years ago. It was funded by limiting income tax deductions for filers earning over $300,000 per year. The program's funding mechanism raised more than expected in the 2023-24 fiscal year, but its costs also exceeded projections, resulting in a budget gap that rose to roughly $50 million this year. Proposition LL will allow the state to keep the $12.4 million in excess 2023-2024 revenue that would otherwise be returned to voters under the 1992 state constitutional amendment known as the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights. Proposition MM aims to permanently fund the full program by further limiting tax deductions for filers earning over $300,000 a year. About 194,000 Coloradans in that high-income category would pay an average of $486 more in income taxes yearly, according to nonpartisan state fiscal analysis. Keep Kids Fed, Colorado reported, $739,200 in contributions since June, mostly from the nonprofit Hunger Free Colorado. The measures were endorsed by a long list of organizations, including Children's Hospital Colorado, Great Education Colorado, Mi Familia Vota, Rocky Mountain Farmers Union, and Save the Children Action Network. The measures did not draw an organized opposition campaign. During a special legislative session in August, Colorado lawmakers tweaked Proposition MM to allow the additional revenue to be spent on broader efforts to reduce food insecurity, one, the Healthy Schools Meal for All program's costs are covered. That would help the state partially offset the impact, estimated at up to $170 million annually, of reduced funding and higher administrative costs for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, as a result of cuts passed by congressional Republicans in July. While we celebrate this victory for Colorado kids and families, we also cannot ignore that, for thousands of Colorado families, this remains a time of deep economic hardship and food insecurity, made worse by USDA's refusal to provide full funding for SNAP and the devastating cuts to SNAP Congress approved this past summer. Anya Rose, Director of Public Policy at Hunger Free Colorado, said in a statement. This story is from Colorado Newsline. From the Canyon Courier, fire insurance costs discussion ongoing, advocates say. Industry reps, elected officials, and county staff tell Foothills residents how they're trying to solve cost issue. By Jane Reuter. Fire insurance is a huge pain point for Foothills residents who love their quiet mountain homes but are struggling with the cost to protect them from one of the area's greatest threats. The frustration was evident among the nearly 200 people who came to Conifer High School last week to learn about options for fire insurance. The event, hosted by the Conifer Wildland Division, featured speakers from United Policyholders and the Colorado FAIR Plan. State Senator Lisa Cutter also spoke about what's happening in the insurance market, new coverage options, and how legislation is addressing wildfire risk. A Colorado State University analysis of recent trends in Colorado's homeowners insurance market ranks Colorado as the sixth costliest state for homeowners insurance in the nation. From 2018 to 2023, premiums increased a staggering 58%. The average insurance premium is nearly $4,100 annually for $300,000 in coverage, and costs in wildfire-prone areas continue to escalate. But the state of Colorado, nonprofits, and others are working to help homeowners find more affordable options, and several of them spoke at the October 28th meeting. Up Help. United Policyholders, a California-based nonprofit, was created as a useful source of information and voice for consumers of all types of insurance across the United States. The group doesn't sell insurance or take money from insurance companies, but aims to give consumers the facts on buying insurance and navigating claims. Its three programs help property owners by advocating for pro-consumer laws and public policy, disaster preparedness, and insurance education and insurance-related disaster recovery. Claim costs, inflation, and climate change are among the factors heavily contributing to higher insurance costs, said UpHelp's Colorado liaison Lisa Hughes. Homeowners insurance has been harder to find, keep, find, and afford, she said. Name brand insurers are pulling out or limiting the number of policies they'll write in an area. Experienced recommendations. Hughes is a survivor of the December 2021 Marshall Fire who rebuilt her home. The tragic experience taught her a lot about fire insurance. The new normal is you have to pay more attention to your policy, your deductible, she said. Before the Marshall Fire, I probably never read my policy. Now I read it. She recommended homeowners get a replacement cost coverage policy instead of cash value and get extended replacement coverage as well as building code compliance and upgrade coverage. She urged them to understand what the policy covers, such as mold, flood, and earth movement coverage, and urged them to consider extra coverage for jewelry, art, and antiques. They should also get flood insurance. Erosion is common after wildfire, and with erosion comes flooding, she said. They should shop around and look for a proactive broker, and she suggested checking for discounts and bundling their home and auto with one insurer to save money. They should know their deductible and consider raising it while reducing or eliminating buckets of coverage they can live without. She recommended against making small claims and urged them to mitigate and harden their home by creating defensible space, making sure to give their insurer proof of the work they've done. Take pictures or video of everything in your house and save it to the cloud, she said. Hughes said insurers rarely cancel homeowners. That's an action typically taken if premiums aren't paid. Instead, they more often drop or non-renew a policy at the end of a contract due to a long list of potential reasons, including a home's age, risk score, or something as simple as a monthly agency policy quota. For those who are dropped or non-renewed, Hughes urged shopping for new insurance immediately and working with a proactive local agent. Your insurer is required to give you 60 days notice in advance of your policy end date, she said. You may need all 60 days. The main thing is to avoid being underinsured. Be prepared, not scared. Get educated on your options. Colorado Fair Plan. The Colorado Fair Plan was introduced in July 2025 to do just what its name suggests. Provide coverage for those with properties standard insurers have deemed too high risk to cover. We're the insurer of last resort, said Executive Director Kelly Campbell. If you're coming to the FAIR plan, you don't have another option. Our rates will reflect the high risk nature of the properties we insure. It's really intended to be a safety net. To qualify, a potential policyholder must have proof of rejection from three standard insurance companies. The FAIR plan doesn't offer replacement, but an actual cost policy, which means the policyholder gets the cash value, the replacement cost minus depreciation. It's basic property insurance, Campbell said. The FAIR plan is intended to address availability and not affordability. It may not look as expensive up front as a traditional policy, so it's important you understand what coverage you're getting. We may not be your best option, but if you need us, we'll be that safety net. The FAIR plan is today protecting $64 million worth of property, she said. It's not large, she said, but that $64 million that would otherwise be unprotected. We are seeing folks that have had lapses in coverage, and we are able to provide that vital safety net. While the fare plan doesn't cover any extras, she said some carriers are stepping to offer some of those additional coverages. Legislative action. Senator Lisa Cutter said the Marshall Fire ignited Colorado's legislature to help its residents. We've done so many pieces of legislation related to wildfire insurance in the last couple of years, and they've been bipartisan for the most part, she said. Everyone's got the same goal, to protect our communities and our homes. That includes HB 1182, signed by the governor in May and scheduled to take effect July 1, 2026. With it, insurance companies will be required to let homeowners know how they can reduce the risk of wildfire to their properties and pay less in premiums. Homeowners could also appeal an assessment of a property's wildfire risk. A lot of our work is focused on mitigation, Cutter said. The reason is that for every dollar we do in mitigation, whether it's state level or mitigation you do on your homes, every dollar spent is a $13 return on investment. Going forward, I think that's going to be a big thing. The Colorado legislature is also trying to help firefighters. We're also hoping to bring forward legislation to provide a more stable source of funding for all of these fire districts, Cutter said. Their costs are going up greatly, and they're not as well resourced as they should be. Jefferson County Fire Management Officer Brian Keating said ballot measure 1A, passed in October 2024, has helped the county step up its efforts. It lets the county retain and spend its collected revenue to fund essential services, which include public safety and a new wildland fire management program. We plan on building school programs and building community engagement, he said. Just educating people on changing forest conditions, what healthy forests really look like, and how that's important in managing wildfire. 1A is allowing the county to hire 37 new staff positions for the program, offer homeowner assessment and certification programs, micro grants for defensible space and home hardening, and generally increase fire management resources. The county has also analyzed road segments that could be critical evacuation routes in a wildfire for their risk level. We have over 270 miles or road segments in extreme, high, or moderate risk category, he said. Many of the fire districts have done similar analysis. We are working collaboratively to try to prioritize where we need to send crews out to do mitigation. One local homeowner expressed frustration at rising interest costs and said mitigation seems to have no impact on them. Homeowners insurance has gone up 300%, he said. It seems some companies are just looking at zip codes, so what's the point of mitigating? Cutler believes HB 1182 will help. It's a groundbreaking bill that we're hoping will change things a bit, he said. It's a really complicated industry, but I think this is a step in the right direction. Regardless, she said, mitigation makes homes and properties safer. Every single thing you do to mitigate your home will help firefighters save your home, she said. Firefighters tell us that again and again. There isn't a silver bullet, Campbell said. It will take a variety of efforts to bring down that risk profile. There are factors like inflation. It costs a lot more now to rebuild a home than it did 5 years ago. We're not able to completely combat that with a single piece of legislation. We know we have a big picture puzzle to solve, but we do think 1182 is an important first step. And this is inclusive of a photo with the following caption. Close to 200 people attended a recent meeting on fire insurance at Conifer High School, sponsored by the Conifer Wildland Division. And this is a picture of an auditorium. You can see about five people's backs to the camera. You have a stage at the far end of the photo with, it looks like a PowerPoint presentation. Somebody standing up, and there are, I don't know, probably 50 people in the room. And it's a pretty big room. It looks like an auditorium in a high school. Jeffco students with 3.0 GPA get CU Denver guarantee. By Susie Glassman. Starting immediately, Jefferson County Public School juniors and seniors who maintain a 3.0 weighted GPA or higher are guaranteed admission to the University of Colorado Denver with no application stress, no waiting for acceptance letters, and no admission fees. The landmark agreement, signed Wednesday at Lakewood High School, creates what Jeffco officials are calling CU Denver Direct, opening college doors for students in the class of 2026 and beyond. For Lakewood High School senior and student body president Felicity Vo, the announcement brings welcome relief. "It's nice knowing that I have a place to go no matter what," she said after learning about the partnership. "Some of the schools I'm applying to have lower acceptance rates. This gives me a guaranteed education." According to Superintendent Tracy Dorland, the partnership addresses a critical concern for many families: college costs. With CU Denver's campus just 30 to 45 minutes from most Jeffco homes, students can live at home and avoid thousands in housing expenses while earning a degree from Colorado's top-ranked university for social mobility, according to U.S. News and World Report. "We know CU Denver is a popular option for our students who live so close to campus and can stay home, if possible, to save money and still go to a four-year university," Dorland said. What students get. According to the school district, students can qualify for automatic admission with a 3.0 weighted GPA or higher. They will also get waived application fees and sample financial aid packages to understand costs up front, as well as other support services to overcome financial and logistical barriers. School officials said they are also pleased to offer their graduates access to a university ranked number one in Colorado for boosting earning potential. Dorland and CU Denver Chancellor Kenneth Christensen signed the agreement at Lakewood High School, which Dorland said has sent more graduates to CU Denver than any other Jeffco high school. Nearly 100 Lakewood alumni currently attend the university. District-wide, about 940 Jeffco graduates are enrolled at CU Denver, with 200 new students starting this fall. "This agreement isn't just about guaranteed admission. It's about belief in our students' potential," Dorland said. Christensen, who has been in his role for 9 months, emphasized that the university's commitment goes beyond policy. "We're here to help support your ambitions, your dreams, and your aspirations," he told students gathered at the announcement. The partnership represents part of Jeffco's broader push to create clear pathways from high school to careers. The district recently signed a similar agreement with Colorado School of Mines and is actively developing programs that help students explore careers as early as middle school. "Data shows the approach is working." Dorland said that Jeffco students who complete four or more career and technical education courses are graduating at rates above 96%. Compared to 70% for their peers without that pathway experience. "It's the best gap-closing opportunity that I have ever experienced in my 26-year career," Dorland said. For parents wondering about next steps, eligible students don't need to take any special action beyond maintaining their GPA. The district and university will provide information about the waived fees and financial aid estimates as students approach application season. J.P. Vu, a recent Devlin High School graduate now at CU Denver, offered his perspective on what awaits future students. "Being in the downtown area, we are so close to so many big companies and so many opportunities to network. There are a lot of connections here," Vu said. The partnership is CU Denver's third such agreement, following similar deals with Denver Public Schools and Aurora Public Schools. "The idea here is to increase that exponentially," Christensen said of current Jeffco enrollment at the university. This article is accompanied by a photo with the following caption: CU Denver Chancellor Kenneth Christensen and Jeffco Superintendent Tracy Dorlin signed the partnership agreement at Lakewood High School as the school's tiger mascot looks on. This is a photo of a man and a woman sitting at a table with a tablecloth that says Jeffco Public Schools, and it has a tree with 7 leaves, each one of them a different color. And they are sitting behind the table, and they're both writing. The man on the left has a light blue colored suit jacket, a white button-down collared shirt, and he's a white man wearing a white colored goatee beard, white hair, sort of balding on the top. He's looking down at the page, holding a pen with his left hand, signing, and he has a watch on. The woman to his left, if you're looking at the photo, she's on the right. She has on a black long-sleeved top. She has blonde hair. She's looking down, signing with a pen on a piece of paper with her right hand. She's white, blonde hair, looking down at the piece of paper. Behind them are several graphics. One of them is a Lakewood High School. It looks like he looks like a panther or some type of wild cat in black, in kind of a light colored blue with red and white graphics. There's also another graphic that says your place, I can't quite read it, but it's white with green, yellow, and blue graphics. There's another graphic that says communities, something legacy, and it's green with blue and purple and yellow and orange colored. It looks like a pinwheel. There are several people on this graphic. A couple of them are wearing construction hats. Then over to the right, the mascot, it says Denver Lynx on it. And it looks like it's a tiger. It has black shorts and a black t-shirt on. New faces emerge as Jeffco school board reshaped. Voters reshape board as district faces $60 million budget shortfall aftermath of school shooting by Susie Glassman. Jefferson County voters elected an entirely new slate of school board members Tuesday, with preliminary results showing challengers leading in all 3 contested races. This comes as the district grapples with a $60 million budget shortfall and the aftermath of September school shooting at Evergreen High School. Results are as of November 6, although the official results may not be released until later this month. District 1 results. Deneen Echeverria led Michael Yoakum with 64.5% of the vote, 88,689 votes to 48,865 votes, to represent District 1, replacing outgoing board member Danielle Varda, who did not seek re-election. Echeverria, a classroom teacher and mother of 3, would bring her experience managing tight budgets during the 2008 recession to the board. She pledged during the campaign to avoid using one-time funds for ongoing expenses. District 2 results. Peter Givens secured the District 2 seat with 68% of the vote, 97,888 votes to 46,072 votes, defeating Samuel Myrant. The winner will replace Paula Reed, who did not seek re-election. Gibbons, an attorney with labor movement experience who was endorsed by JCEA, emphasized transparency and community involvement during the campaign in making difficult budget decisions. He called for consulting district educators rather than outside consultants to save money. Jeffco voters have shown they believe all students in Jeffco should have safe and welcoming neighborhood public schools with their vote this November, said Brooke Williams, art educator and JCEA president. Our community stands with educators in ensuring our students have access to the career pathways and or college they need to be successful after graduation. District 5 results. In the only race featuring an incumbent, Tina Moenian won the District 5 seat with 40.7% of the vote in a three-way race. Mary Parker received 31.6%, 45,678 votes, and Gloria Terry Raskin received 27.7%, 39,928 votes. Moenian, a mediator with a master's degree in psychology who was endorsed by JCEA, would join the board after pledging to keep budget cuts as far from classrooms as possible. She emphasized connecting families to community mental health resources. Parker, the current board president who runs a human resources consulting business, was seeking re-election after declining to participate in the JCEA endorsement process. She pointed during the campaign to increasing teacher compensation by more than 30% over 4 years and developing a budget reduction framework that prioritizes students. Parker was endorsed by Everytown for gun safety. Raskin, an Army veteran with an MBA in accounting, campaigned on her military experience with process improvement to help identify budget cuts. She stressed teaching students to use the Safe to Tell reporting program. What's next? The new board will be sworn in later this month and immediately face critical decisions about how to close the $60 million budget gap. Key challenges awaiting the new board include finalizing budget cuts for the 2025-26 school year, addressing teacher recruitment and retention as neighboring districts offer higher salaries, implementing enhanced mental health services following the Evergreen High School shooting, and deciding whether and when to pursue a mill levy override. Both Gibbons and Moenian were endorsed by JCEA, whose members volunteered this fall to help elect them. Whitney Newman, elementary educator at Elk Creek Elementary and chair of JCEA's political action team, said educators hope the newly elected board members will do a better job of managing our taxpayer dollars to ensure funding reaches critical resources that support our students in the classroom. Campaign themes. Throughout the campaign, candidates grappled with balancing fiscal responsibility against maintaining educational quality. The September 10th shooting at Evergreen High School elevated discussions about mental health services and school safety, with candidates debating the effectiveness of current programs like Safe to Tell and the need for full-time mental health professionals in every school. Trust emerged as perhaps the defining issue of the race. The Jefferson County Education Association's unanimous vote of no confidence in Superintendent Tracy Dorlin cast a shadow over discussions with candidates promising greater transparency and improved communication between district leadership, teachers, and the community. Multiple candidates cited the need to rebuild trust before asking voters for additional funding. The teachers' union actively campaigned for Gibbons and Moenian, with educators expressing hope that new board members would bring the transparency and accountability needed to restore the community trust. The district's declining enrollment also featured prominently, with candidates noting that Jeffco has lost nearly 8,000 students while neighboring districts and private schools have grown. Several candidates emphasized the need for diverse educational pathways, particularly expanding career and technical education programs to attract and retain families. The legacy of 21 school closures since 2021 lingered throughout the campaign, with candidates acknowledging the community trauma while debating whether additional consolidation might be necessary. most agreed that any future cuts should prioritize protecting classroom instruction while reducing central office spending. From the Jeffco transcript, Lakewood City Council election results by Ken Cruz, Bill Furman, and Paula Nystrom win contested Lakewood City Council races by Lillian Fuglet. Ken Cruz, Bill Furman, and Paula Nystrom appear to have won the contested Lakewood City Council races, while Jeslyn Shahar-Razai and Liz Black have won in their respective and uncontested races. As of 8.02 p.m. on November 5th, uncertified election results show Cruz had won the Ward 3 race with 51.19% of votes, while Furman had won the Ward 4 race with 72.98% of the votes, and Nystrom had won the Ward 5 race with 67.76% of the votes. In Ward 1, Shahar-Razai ran uncontested and won. She was running for re-election after being elected to the Ward 1 seat in 2021. Shahar-Razai has said that she wanted to run for a second term to continue supporting her constituents and working to make Lakewood better. "I'm excited that we're celebrating another fair and safe election cycle here in Colorado," Shahar-Razai said. "Even though I was running unopposed, we had a tremendous amount of people who still came out and gave their vote to me, and I'm just humbled by that." In Ward 2, Black ran uncontested and won. The Ward 2 seat was previously held by Sophia Mayette Guerrero, who has served one term and did not seek re-election. However, Mayette Guerrero supported Black's candidacy. Black currently serves as the executive director for 40 West Arts, an arts nonprofit in Lakewood. "I'm just really excited to serve," Black said. "I'm just thrilled to be a part of civic engagement and activism and democracy, and to be able to be a voice for my fellow community members in Ward 2 and throughout the city of Lakewood. I just feel really thrilled and just really honored to be able to be on the same council as so many incredible people." Ward 3. Ken Cruz won the Ward 3 seat with a 51.19% of the votes. He was running for a re-election to the Ward 3 seat after being elected in a special election in March. Cruz said he was looking forward to continuing his listening tour in Lakewood and expanding the advisory committees he had already created. "The biggest thing I've told people tonight is that the work continues," Cruz said. "My goal kind of remains the same, and it's to make the local government feel local and make sure that every voice has a seat at the table." Pete Roybal lost with 27.53% of the votes. Roybal previously served as the Ward 3 representative from 2011 to 2019. He has said that, along with his past tenure on council, his 21 years of military service and later self-employment work gave him a well-rounded perspective to bring to council. Bonnie Nguyen lost with 21.28% of votes. Nguyen has worked as an EMT around the Denver metro area for over a decade and previously volunteered for a search and rescue group in Lakewood when she was in high school. She has said that her work in healthcare has made her want to work towards public safety and community health. "I think I did a pretty good job for being someone who is new, who's independent, and who has no money backing," Nguyen said. "I had pretty much a month late start, and I don't have any name recognition to myself, but the fact that I got around a quarter of the votes, it's very empowering." Ward 4. Bill Furman won with 72.98% of the votes. Furman, like Cruz, was elected in the March special election. Before being elected, Furman previously served on the Government Affairs Committee and Lakewood's Planning Commission. "I'm obviously excited and really refreshed that Ward 4 supported me," Furman said. "I feel like this is a good sign that while not everybody supports everything I'm doing, at least they trust that I'll work with them and communicate with them, and they're mostly in line with what we're trying to achieve on council." Ariel Manzanares, Cisney, lost with 14.06% of votes. Manzanares, Cisney, faced online backlash during his campaign for his online political presence, particularly his posts about women. He is also the subject of a permanent protection order from a previous classmate. He said the results were pretty much as expected. Lakewood is sticking with the status quo, which works for me, Manzanares Cisney said. Looks like I'm still free to watch city council meetings from home at 2x speed. This was a lot of fun to do last minute without any preparation or experience. Desiree Gonzalez lost with 12.81% of the votes. In May, Gonzalez was sentenced to 18 months of probation for sending threatening messages to members of Lakewood City Council. Bill Furman didn't win because he was the better candidate. He bought that election, Gonzalez said. My campaign faced extraordinary hurdles after I was falsely arrested and abused by JCSO, which left me with pneumonia, but I still showed up and told the truth. This isn't over. I'm already eyeing Dave Ryan's seat if it opens. He looks headed to the House, and I plan to keep fighting for accountability in Lakewood. Write-in candidate Mick Munden trailed with 0.15% of votes. Munden previously ran in the March special election and lost. He has also previously pled guilty and served time for multiple convictions. Ward 5. Paula Nystrom won the Ward 5 seat with 67.76% of the votes. Nystrom was running for re-election after being elected in a special election in January 2024. Nystrom has said that leadership roles throughout her career, such as being an officer in the Marine Corps, have helped prepare her to serve on council. I'm pretty pleased and very grateful for all people that helped me canvass, Nystrom said. It was a lot of work, but obviously it panned out for me, and I'm excited about being able to continue some of the work that I've been doing and keep building on that. Karen Gordy lost with 32.24% of the votes. Gordy has previously served on the Lakewood Advisory Commission, as well as participating in the Citizens Planning Academy that Lakewood formerly offered. She has said that she chose to run to represent citizens' voices. Thank you for joining us for the Saturday, November 15, 2025 reading of the Jefferson County Publications. My name is Donna Gill.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.